I'm sorry, but you are just going to have to get used to the idea of not knowing how things are going to turn out. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday, today the 14th of April. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin today with two items, the theme of both of which is, I don't know. We're going to have to see how it goes. I mean, that's me reading between the lines, but it is pretty close to spot on, if I say so myself. Item one, the International Monetary Fund, from which comes today an economic forecast that, it's not great. The IMF says we are on the brink of the worst economy we have seen since the Great Depression. However, extreme uncertainty abounds. It's pretty much everything depends on what that virus does. So, asks Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, how did the IMF come up with its very specific forecasts?
The IMF predicts the global economy will shrink by 3% this year, and the world's economic output will plummet $9 trillion over 2 years. How does it know this? It doesn't, for sure.
This has been one of the hardest forecasting jobs we've had to do.
Geeta Gopinath is the IMF's chief economist. This is her report, and even she says it could be wrong. Gopinath has never seen anything like this. She had to improvise.
We spent a lot of time talking to epidemiologists and public health officials. Now, that's not something we've ever done in the past. In that sense, it's very different this time around.
Gopinath also factored in how social distancing is affecting businesses like restaurants, movie theaters, and stores, and which countries rely most on those sectors. She looked at who has the best healthcare systems and what each country is doing to prop up its economy. But she's baked in uncertainty. She expects to revise her report. Oxford Economics chief U.S. economist Gregory Dacko says that's no surprise.
We're looking at forecasts that may change dramatically over the course of a day or even an hour based on a policy decision.
Dacko says any changes to the IMF forecasts will likely be to the downside. The report already says if the pandemic doesn't recede in the second half of this year, global economic growth will shrink by 6%. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Item two in our opening gambit today of, I don't know how that's going to work, is the reopening of this economy. California Governor Gavin Newsom had a pretty good line today as he laid out how his state is going to get going again. It's not going to be like flipping a light switch, Newsom said, more like a dimmer. And as Marketplace's Jack Stewart reports, we are all just going to have to get used to living in the economic dark for a while.
Personal consumption is a huge driver of the U.S. economy. It accounts for around 70% of GDP. That means the people who buy goods and services, so really all of us, are key, says David Garfield at consulting firm Alex Partners.
How consumers think, feel, and act in response to economic reopening will be pivotal.
He says there's still so much uncertainty around timing and whether there could be another spike of COVID-19, but some early signs do show people want to spend.
There will certainly be some pent-up demand for consumer goods and services in some areas. We think about haircuts and trips to the dentist, for example.
And of course, people have also been missing trips to the movie theater and their favorite restaurant. But it's not so clear if they'll rush back to them. Denise Dalhoff at the Conference Board says businesses will have to work to make people feel safe.
That includes providing disinfectants. It might include having mandatory masks and maybe even gloves at the store.
Another concern for many consumers will simply be financial. The millions of Americans who've lost their jobs and others who are feeling insecure might not want to spend. Ravi Dhar, director of the Yale Center for Consumer Insights, also warns that asking people to predict how they'll feel later while we're still in the middle of this crisis can be misleading.
Because what people predict is really based on what they're thinking and feeling at the moment.
And right now, people might be frustrated at home and predict that they'll head out and start spending right away. But what they'll end up doing will be driven by how confident they feel when stay-at-home orders are lifted. I'm Jack Stewart for Marketplace.
Okay, Wall Street, I know you're curious. At least 10% unemployment in this country. The IMF says the global economy is going to shrink 3% this year, and yet the major indices are having something of a rally? All I can say is remember the theme of the top of this program today, people. Yeah, I don't know how that's working out. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. It's been here at Marketplace and at a whole lot of other businesses out there basically a good month now of working from home. Long enough for the novelty to have worn off, long enough for all of us to have settled into some new rhythms, and for the inevitable problems to have become very, very clear. Problems for us worker bees and problems for the bosses, too. So from the Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more now on leading a team through these Zoom meeting times.
In San Francisco, Matthew Grimm leads a team of audio engineers at Activision, which makes the video games Call of Duty and Crash Bandicoot. They're going through something like the seven stages of grief, except for remote work. First, there was shock.
We are not used to working remotely. We literally had to evacuate our building because somebody had COVID-19. And so one day they just called us. They're like, don't come in.
Then came doubt about whether he could manage a suddenly remote team.
Keeping people on task can be a difficult thing because you don't see them every day. You can't do an office walk by. You don't see them in the hallway.
That morphed into anger, which flared at a recent project meeting where people were interrupting each other and the tone got kind of nasty.
There is a lot of confusion and miscommunication. And I think people took that very, very personally, where talking face to face, that never would have happened.
How should companies guide workers through the pain to feel okay about working from home? Sam Bacharach is a professor of labor management at Cornell. He says the crisis demands emotional intelligence.
How do you listen constructively? And how do you instill trust? How do you begin that deeper dialogue that actually makes someone want to deliver for you because you're in their corner?
Managing remotely, especially right now, he says, is weirdly more intimate. You're seeing people in their living rooms, their personal lives laid bare. No hiding behind business suits or cubicle walls. Managers can't physically watch over where, when, and how work gets done. Instead, it's all about results.
For the last number of years, we've been talking about changing the supervision style. And this is moving the clock ahead.
But some types of work are just harder to do from home. Eric Reddy leads a young sales team at Reward Gateway, a human resource software company in Boston.
There's not a ton of introverted salespeople that are out there. And so this is a very unique setting for people who are traditionally extroverted, who love to jump on the phones, love to talk to people, love to have conversations.
Typically, he sits with his team in an open office, overhearing their sales calls and giving rolling informal feedback all day. Think Glengarry Glen Ross, but nicer, I think. I mean, it is kind of hard to ABC, always be closing, at home in your pajamas.
Just noticing a challenge to keep people as motivated and energized as they might have been when they were looking at you in the eye every single day.
To compensate, he's holding more one-on-one and team meetings, but on video, that can get awkward. He worries it could feel overbearing or confrontational in a way in-person communication doesn't. And even teams that are used to remote communication are struggling.
Being remote in a pandemic is not the same as being remote before the pandemic.
Carolyn Koprasch leads special projects at the social media app Buffer, which has been 100% remote for the last 10 years. She says right now, the most important skill a remote manager can have is the ability to go with the flow.
You know, we've just had to sort of change our expectations of what a normal productive day looks like for the average teammate, because it's just not a normal time.
I think they call that the acceptance stage. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
A month ago today, the Surgeon General of the United States recommended postponing elective medical procedures. Flattens the curve, preserves masks and equipment, and might be reduces the strain on medical professionals and the healthcare system overall. But it also cuts revenue for all kinds of medical establishments, big and small. Dr. Scott Anzalone is an independent family physician in Logan, Ohio, who we first started talking to for our series about the American labor force called The United States of Work. He owns and operates Stagecoach Family Medicine in Logan. He's also the president of the local school board, by the way. So a month into this economic crisis and a month after Ohio school shut down, we called him back up. Dr. Anzalone, how are you?
Hi, Guy. How are you? I'm doing well.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Let me ask you a question now to start with, not as Dr. Scott Anzalone, family doctor, but the sole proprietor of Stagecoach Family Medicine. How's the business?
We're hanging in there day by day. Our business is down from what it normally is, but we're still seeing patients. Probably went busier than most around. But we definitely have a decrease in productivity here a little bit, and it is a bit financially stressful. I'm trying to keep my employees all employed and so they don't have shortened paychecks. Mm-hmm. But we're here every day still caring for those who need cared for.
How many people you have working for you, Scott?
Seven.
Seven people. You're going to be able to this is not news that they want to hear on the radio, but how does it look, say, if this goes another 8 weeks?
Well, I get paid last, so I always put my employees first. So it may be a little more sour for myself. But 8 weeks, I think, you know, we can keep squeaking out. I did apply for the payroll protection program.
Yeah.
And I did get approved. However, we haven't seen a dollar yet. And there's in the bank, our local banker states they're not sure when that'll happen, but that will take a lot of stress off of myself. I with that extra bit of money, I can make sure all my employees stay employed and get a paycheck, even if our hours are a little shorter.
Yeah, I will tell you anecdotally, small business owners I'm in touch with say the exact same thing about getting their hands on that paycheck protection money. Look around Greater Logan for me, would you? And tell me what it looks like. Are you seeing businesses closed, restaurants, you know, not open? What?
Yeah, pretty much all of our small businesses are closed. All of our restaurants, for the most part, unless they have takeout, which are just your unhealthy fast foods. Our local hardware store and our small mom and pop shops like that are essential. Are making accommodations. I know our hardware store is shortening their hours, but they're open. They're letting one person in at mm-hmm. a time. Mm-hmm. But most of our small businesses are struggling.
Yeah. Change of gears here. You are also the president of the local school board. The mm-hmm. day we spoke to you last, the 12th of March, was when schools were closed in Ohio. You had talked a bit about since internet can be spotty where you are, that the teachers are doing paper packets and getting them to kids. Is that now still happening, and how's it going?
Yeah, our schools, for the most part, are still closed, and it doesn't look like we're going to be able to open back up this school year. Our schools are feeding our children breakfast and lunch 7 days a week that they can be picked up once a week. There's a lot of kids around here that's where they get most of their, at least their, two meals a day are from the school. So we are feeding our kids academically. It's a day-by-day process. We're looking at trying to put hot spots around our county because we're just struggling trying to figure out how can we, keep academics going strongly. If we had good internet access and broadband, it would make it much easier, like our northern neighbors. So we're looking at putting hot spots in our buses and driving them out to remote areas. And then the other issue is our seniors. Our local community gives out about $180,000 in scholarships every year.
Oh, man.
And we're trying to figure out how can we still have some type of recognition ceremony for that, as well as graduation and prom. We're just trying to figure out how we can do that.
Yeah. Same thing here where I live. The school board's promising, but man,
yeah.
it's a tall order. Dr. Scott Anzalone in Logan, Ohio. Scott, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Lots more about our project, the United States of Work, at marketplace.org. Also there, by the way, newsletters, lots of them, one for every show we do. marketplace.org/newsletters to subscribe. Coming up.
There are circumstances sometimes beyond one's control,
I do indeed. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 558 points today, 2.3%, closed at 23,949. The NASDAQ gained 323 points. That's 3.9%, 85.15. The S&P 500 up 84 points, 3%, 28.46 there. Johnson & Johnson climbed 4.4% today. The healthcare giant said today it was raising its quarterly dividend even as it cuts its adjusted profit forecast for this year of 2020. Procter & Gamble climbed 4.3%. Apple sweetened 5%. Today, data showed shipments of iPhones to China rose last month after dropping off real steep in February. Bond prices, well, they rose. Thanks for asking. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note thus fell. That's the way that works. Price goes up, yield goes down. 0.75% on the 10-year. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Tax day was tomorrow until the coronavirus changed the Internal Revenue Service's mind. Circle July the 15th on your calendar if you haven't already done so. But even with the extra time, tax season 2020 has been chaotic for preparers and accountants, as Marketplace's Marielle Segarra reports.
The other day, Andrea Parnes, a CPA in New York, was on the phone with some friends.
And they were saying, whoa, he must be so relieved that tax season ends in July. You must be, like, relaxing.
Yeah, not really. First of all, initially, the IRS only extended the tax filing deadline for certain things, like income taxes. There were still other forms to fill out and payments to make. The government eventually pushed those deadlines back, too, but
we were not necessarily informed about extended deadlines up until the last minute in some cases.
Also, while accountants now have until July to file their clients' federal tax returns,
some states are still due before July 15th, and a couple states have moved their deadline to after July 15th.
Matt Metris is a tax preparer in New York, but has clients in other states, like Mississippi, where returns are due May 15th. Imagine what it takes to keep track of all these deadlines. Well, a really big spreadsheet, actually, from an accounting trade group.
It's 397 pages. It was last updated yesterday at 5 p.m., and it's constantly being updated.
Meanwhile, accountants and tax preparers are trying to advise their clients on the government's new small business loan programs, all while navigating video chats with clients who are used to coming in person.
I honestly don't think I've ever been in a tax season that's been so bizarre.
Not even last year, which was, if you recall, the first filing season after the biggest overhaul of the tax code in 30 years. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
So let's keep going with taxes here for a minute and how the incredible shrinking coronavirus economy is going to make life really, really hard for state and local governments that depend on those taxes. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab has that one.
For Russell Easley, who owns New Orleans Airboat Tours, spring is money-making season. His team usually takes more than 200 visitors to the swamps every day.
We go out there and we check out the alligators. There's a lot of shorebirds. There's raccoons, bald eagles.
But with COVID-19, no one's coming to see the animals anymore. Easley had to close down and lay off 25 people. That means no money for his business, no money for his employees, and no money for Louisiana, which relies on taxes from tourism. Christiana McFarlane is the research director at the National League of Cities.
The economy overall has been shook. The economy is what drives local revenues, and this is very, very putting a lot of stress on their budgets.
Those budgets rely on sales, property, and income taxes. And the governments that get the bulk of their money from one type could have a harder time recovering. In some places in Ohio, income tax makes up almost 75% of the revenue. In Oklahoma City, sales tax makes up almost 60%.
They're going to have that revenue stream dry up overnight.
Michael Pagano directs the Government Finance Research Center at the University of Illinois Chicago. He says for local governments, a big loss in tax revenue means reevaluating budgets.
This requires that all local governments have identified what they consider to be their core services.
Pagano says infrastructure projects like railways, roads, and dams could see budget cuts. Also, parks and recreation and other city services like garbage pickup could be reduced. Even so, some budget areas could get a boost after COVID-19, like public health and safety. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
We're learning a bunch about the gears of this economy in this crisis, about what pieces of it are essential and which ones aren't, and of the pieces that are essential, how much infrastructure supports them. For instance, grocery stores, clearly essential. Meat processing plants that get us the meat we buy at those grocery stores, also essential, as are the livestock auctions whence all that meat comes. Madeline Beck from the Mountain West News Bureau has that one.
This is the sound of a livestock auction at the Twin Falls Livestock Commission in southern Idaho. The auction is limiting who can come because of COVID-19, so Jake Billington recorded it for me. He's worked at this auction for 28 years.
Ever since I was old enough to walk and talk, I've been around it, been in it, been doing something around there.
Auctions like these are staying open to maintain the food supply chain. That's why they're considered essential by the government. And auctions are essential to ranchers, too. They need to pay their bills.
We're not just selling livestock. We're not just selling their cattle. We're selling their livelihood.
But the auctions have made changes because of the pandemic. In rural communities, they're often social gathering places. But now, many have limits. Sellers are asked to just drop off cows and leave. And as for spectators?
We have limited it down to just serious buyers only. You know, one person per family member.
And it's not just this auction in Idaho taking precautions, says Chelsea Good. She's with the Livestock Marketing Association.
We've seen many of them take big steps, like reducing the number of people that are there at their auctions.
Her association supports those kind of measures to keep people healthy, but it's also working to keep the beef moving.
We've worked with both our federal officials, but then also our states and local communities to help get them that critical food supply designation and allow them to continue operating in this important time.
She says auctions are vital to rural communities nationwide. The U.S. Department of Agriculture says receipts for cattle marketed for slaughter totaled about $67 billion in 2018. And while some ranchers might be able to market cows online, she says it's important to have multiple bidders in the room. That's what drives prices up so ranchers can make a profit.
Candidly, that's what livestock auctions are all about. We've got an auctioneer, we've got a competition and bidding. We're working for that producer.
And some of those prices could use a boost right now. The pandemic has created a lot of market uncertainty. Prices for things like burger you'd buy in bulk at the store made historic gains in March as people rushed to the store to stock up. But other types of meat have taken a hit, like cuts restaurants usually buy. And so the beef industry may have to ride out months of uncertainty as we all figure out what's coming next with this virus. In Boise, Idaho, I'm Madeline Beck for Marketplace.
At the tail end of last year, we spent a little time checking in with what was then the fastest growing part of the American labor force, part-time workers over the age of 55. Suffice it to say, this economy has changed a whole lot since then for all of us, more so, though, for those on the edges. So we thought we'd circle back.
I'm Joanne D'Antonio, and I live in Los Angeles. I teach older adults how to use public transportation. My job is coming to an end because our grant wasn't renewed, and it wasn't safe for people to be out. The last field training I did was on Election Day on March 4th. So we had taken a trip to the observatory, and we actually had a full house. But then the word came down that we had to isolate, and that was my last ride. You know, the awkward thing is that it was a nice supplemental income. It was something that I certainly didn't feel I was aged out of. I had the energy, I had the enthusiasm, but there are circumstances sometimes beyond one's control, you know. So I'm sad that I couldn't finish the travel training with the people that still wanted help. But this was really a very fun job, and I just got a lot of joy out of it.
Joanne D'Antonio, safer at home here in L.A. Let us know, would you, how this coronavirus economy has changed things for you. Marketplace.org is where you can do that. This final note on the way out today, in which dreams do come true and brands get a little free press in the doing. Maybe you saw that picture on social media the other day. 93-year-old Olive Veronese of Seminole, PA, standing, socially distant as appropriate, in her front doorway, holding a can of Coors Light and a sign that said, "I need more beer," Exclamation point, I should tell you, in the original. Well, Coors caught wind of it, and yesterday, 10 cases were delivered safely, of course. All right, got to go. The Dow up 558 today, 2.3%. The NASDAQ gained 323 points, 3.9%. S&P 500 up 84 points. That is 3% there. Remember the mantra of the day, peeps. Yeah, I don't know how that's working. Our digital and on-demand team includes Kerry Barber, Samantha Field, Ben Hethcote, Sarah Menendez, and Erica Phillips. Sitar Nieves is our executive director of on-demand. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.